All right, I know that a lot of you have some great activity going on Sundays, so you're not able to join us live. And for one reason or another, you may not be aware yet that we are broadcasting also from speakingwith.com, actually with recorded interviews and discussions. And so I'm still bringing most of the one-hour broadcast on Sunday. We have a two-hour broadcast, but I'm trying to bring 1 hour of it to you during the week, usually on Wednesdays. And so here is the discussion we had on the previous Sunday regarding relationships.
I don't have to tell you how to praise him. Just begin to say what he is to you. Come on, clap your hands in his place. Hallelujah. Oh, yeah. Oh, come on, clap your hands.
Again, Miss LaRue Howard, the song is entitled, He Is. Definitely going to be letting us hear some more of that as we go throughout this hour. And you know, we were listening to them talking about how God is closer than a brother. Wow. And I know a lot of us have found that to be true. God closer than a brother, better than a brother. That's all about relationships. And that's what we're going to look at now. As a matter of fact, I want us to take a look at what Barner Group is saying about relationships. And I want us to get a feel for where relationships are now, but also see if we can kind of predict where relationships will be headed in the future. This is 2017. And I want you to think about all the different things that are going on now. All the different things that may be going on in the future, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 15 years from now, 30 years from now, assuming we're still here, and I think we will be. But look at all that's taking place in the world. And as we look again at where relationships are right now, maybe even comparing relationships right now to where relationships were, say 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 40 years ago. Some of you take it back 70 years. See how relationships may have evolved over the decades and see if we can kind of predict where they might be in the future. Barna took a peek at some of the changing dynamics of marriage and singleness, as well as the trends toward premarital cohabitation, the impact of online dating, and the possibilities of finding love at work. So you hear about that now, marriage and singleness, premarital cohabitation. Far as you know, is that up or down? People living together without being married. Is that up or down? We're seeing more of that or less of that now compared to, say, 5 years ago, or say, compared to 12 years ago, compared to 20 years ago. Do you think that will be up or down 10 years from now compared to where it is now? People living together, but not. But not being married. Online dating. Where will that take relationships? Well, as it turns out, Barna discovered that the percentage of single people continues to grow. They've been collecting demographic data on the American public for decades, and they've been able to provide some fascinating insights into the generational shifts occurring nationwide, particularly when it comes to singleness, marriage, and divorce. Overall, the segment of American adults who are currently married, though fluctuating slightly over the last 16 years, remains steady at just over half of all adults, roughly 52% in 2000 and 52% in 2016. That's the percentage of people who have been married in recent times. Those who are currently divorced also remain steady at about 10% from 11% in 2000. And because of the reality of remarriage, the currently divorce rate doesn't take into account past divorce, which when accounted for brings the proportion of American adults who have ever been divorced to 25%. And that's a rate that has remained steady since 2000 when it was 24%. The percentage of single people who have never married has increased from just over 27% to 30%. But here's the thing. Barna says that that really is the big story. And it only gets more pronounced when looking closely at the trends within the different age groups. For instance, between 2000 and 2016, the relational makeup of people aged between 25 and 39 shifted dramatically. In the 16 years since 2000, the amount of single people in the 25 to 29 range rose 9 percentage points from 50% to 59%. The amount of single people in the 30 to 39 range rose 10 percentage points from 24% to 34%. But then looking at it from a different angle, during the same time period, those groups saw similar shifts in the number of people who were married. Those same age groups, in the 16 years since 2000, the amount of people married in the 25 to 29 range dropped 7 percentage points from 43% to 36%. The amount of people married in the 30 to 39 range dropped 8 percentage points from 65% to 57%. Would you have guessed that 16 years ago, from the age range of 30 to 39, 65% of our young people were married? And now it's down to 57%, and Barna says these are some pretty massive shifts, most pronounced among those in their 20s and 30s, toward a broader move to delay marriage among younger Americans. So if you were in your late 20s in the year 2000, you were much more likely to be married then than if you were that same age today. These figures are staggering considering the relatively short time period in which they occur. The Census Bureau statistics from 2011 corroborate these broader shifts. Americans are getting married later and later. How many of you in your teens, your late teens, have decided that you're really not going to get married anytime soon? And you're thinking about putting it off until maybe your late 30s or early 40s. How many of you in your early 20s are saying, you know, I know I'm not going to be ready to get married anytime soon. So I think that I'm just going to hold off. Maybe by the time I hit my early 40s, I'll be ready to be married. What is driving that decision for you? What is the deciding factor, or what are the deciding factors for those of you who are saying, I'm going to hold off? And some of you may be saying, I'm going to hold off as long as I can, or I'm just going to hold off indefinitely. What's driving that decision? And for those of you who are saying, well, you know, I'd like to be married by the time I'm in my mid to late 20s at the latest. What are the deciding factors, or what is the deciding factor? Well, check this out. The average age of first marriage in the United States is 27 for women and 29 for men. That's up from 23 for women and 26 for men in 1990 and 20 and 22 in 1960. Average age of first marriage. In 1960, the average age of first marriage for women was 20 years old. The average age of marriage for a first marriage for men was 22 years old. And now, the average age of first marriage for American women is 27, for American men, 29. In 1960, 72% of all adults in what age range were married? Would you say from 18 to 20? Would you say from 25 to 30? Would you say from 40 to 60? Would you say from 40 to 70? What age range would you say this applies to? That in 1960, 72% of all adults in this age range were married. The age range, ladies and gentlemen, is 18 and older. In 1960, 72% of all adults ages 18 and older were married. How many of you can think back to a time when it wasn't at all unusual to think about, to be planning to be married by the time you were 20? How did that affect your plans for college? 1960, 72% of all adults 18 and older were married. How many of you can recall a time when you could visit a married couple and it was nothing for them to be in their early 20s, 22, 23? Now, average age of first marriage, 27 and 29, the women and men respectively. Today, according to the Barna numbers, whereas 72% of all adults 18 and older were married in 1960, today 52% of all adults 18 and older are married. And when it comes to the faithful, you have differences and you have likenesses. The difference, and they say it's a significant one, is that practicing Christians, so when they're saying faithful here, they don't necessarily mean faithful in marriage, but people who profess to be Christians. Practicing Christians and evangelicals are much more likely to be married than other Americans. For instance, about 59% of people who say that they're practicing Christians are married. And that number has remained fairly steady since 2000. 52% of the general population fit that same bill. 67% of evangelicals are married, and that's 15% higher than the general population. But where practicing Christians and evangelicals share similarities with the rest of the country is in the proportion who have ever been divorced. In fact, both groups equal the rate of divorce, both historically and currently, of the general adult population. And I know that that's something that has been a bit disappointing for quite a few people who profess to be Christians, that we would have just as high a divorce rate within married, you know, people who are supposedly Christians as we do amongst people who say they're not Christians. And all of these just see it as being within quotes when you hear us talk about practicing Christians, etc. Amongst the practicing Christians and evangelicals, 25% who have been married, 25% have been divorced as of the 2016 data, compared to the very same number among all adults. So although those with strong religious convictions are more likely to be married, they are just as likely to also divorce. How about this other one that some people are concerned about? And I'm interested in finding out if there are differences in the way you view what I'm getting ready to mention based on what generation you're a member of. You particularly, we're going to take a look at what the study shows, but you particularly, whether you are in your 20s, your teens, your 40s, your 80s, I'm just curious as to what your views are with regards to this topic, cohabiting. As it turns out, they're saying that dating and cohabiting are becoming more and more synonymous. So basically, you say dating, you mean cohabiting. If a person says cohabiting, they mean dating. What did dating mean to you 10 years ago? How would you have defined it? Dating. When it comes to living together, about 65% of adults either strongly or somewhat agree that it is a good idea to live with someone's significant other before marriage, compared to 35% who either strongly or somewhat disagree with that. 65% of adults say it is a good idea to live together before you get married. 35% say it is not a good idea to live together before you get married. It might seem that couples would live together primarily for convenience or cost saving. But as it turns out, almost all adults see it as a rite of passage in the path toward marriage. A rite of passage. This is what you need to do, a lot of adults are saying and thinking, if you're planning to get married. You need to live together first. The idea of living with someone's significant other before getting married for the sake of convenience, 9% say that. 9%. 5% say it's a good idea to live together in order to save on the cost of rent. 84% of adults say that it is a great idea for people to live together before getting married so that they can see how compatible they are. Though the debate has raged over whether cohabitation either reduces or increases the pressure of marriage, it appears that among those who have actually done it, there was no major effect either way. How many of you have heard that when a couple lives together before they get married, they have a higher risk of ending up divorced than if they had not lived together before getting married? That's what some studies indicate. But they're saying here that really doesn't seem to have had a major effect on increasing or decreasing the risk of divorce by living together before getting married. 62% of adults believe that living together did not affect the pressure to get married at all. And that's really what they're focusing on here. Not so much whether it led to divorce, but the pressure of marriage. Did they live together? If they lived together first, did they feel more pressured to get married? If they lived together first, did they experience less pressure to get married? Okay, you all are living together. You need to go ahead and tie the knot, some people might say. And that couple who's living together might feel that pressure. Yeah, you know, we do need to go ahead and do this. And others might say, and some people have said this, hey, things are going fine like they are. We're just living together and our relationship is good. Why mess it up by getting married? That's what some people say. That's the position that some people take. Either way, again, when it comes to feeling pressured to go ahead and marry, Barna finds that really and truly there was no major effect either way. About 19% who live together say it reduced the pressure to get married. About 18% who live together said it increased the pressure to get married. The most prominent cohabitation detractors are religious groups. And among those who believe that living with a person's significant other before getting married is not a good idea, the biggest factor is religion by 34%. The expectation of abstinence before marriage is a major driver here. 28% indicated, quote unquote, "I don't believe people should have sex before getting married," as their biggest reason for believing that living together without being married is a bad idea. Of lesser importance are issues of practicality. Say for practical reasons. Others say valuing family and tradition at 12%, and other reasons 10%. What would be your reason for saying that it is or is not a good idea to live together without being married, whether you plan to eventually marry or not? What would you see as being pros and or cons of living together without being married?